Hey everyone, welcome back to the Birthling Podcast. I am so excited to be here this week with Dawn Hancock from Pivotal Birth. If you know her on Instagram or you've seen her videos, she is such a plethora of information. We really align just being labor nurses that have left the bedside. Kind of surreal because I was listening to this as we were editing, and this was just after my second day at the last hospital that I worked with. So mostly, and I was even saying, like, I don't know if I could do one more day. This is crazy here. It was a very difficult hospital, and it just kind of brought me back a little PTSD. And I just had to text her real quick because I forgot that I never told her what happened. So I just sent her a quick message just saying, girl, do you know what happened at the next shift after our conversation? Crazy. If you haven't heard about it, you can go back to episode, I think it's 32, where I say what advocacy can lead to as a labor nurse and how you can lose your job from it, how standing up for patients' rights for information to make decisions, to advocate for them. What it can lead to, right? It's a pretty great episode, if you ask me. But yeah, I was really nervous putting it out because it was very personal. Maybe the next episode I'll dive into a little bit what I'm doing now, which is building the home health agency and concierge nursing. I've really jumped in feet first. What do we got to do? So I have started buying equipment. So I have fetal monitors. I've teamed up with an amazing remote fetal monitor company. It's a tech company. And I'll give more information on that episode about what I'm doing. And I have the bilirubin light therapy, the phototherapy beds. I have that ready to go. I have two beds ready. I have all my IV supplies, like boxes right now. If you saw my office, it's boxes on boxes of supplies. I just did it. I pulled the trigger. Sometimes that's what you need to do when you're starting a business, right? And I am very confident in my skills and services and the needs of parents out there. You know, where I think if you're on social media, if you are understand the news out there with a lot of the issues that we have with insurance and getting the care that you want, it's difficult, right? There's a lot of hurdles to go through, and more doctors are choosing to go the concierge route, especially for those, you know, clients that have the money to spend on it. And unfortunately, that's the key is money, but I want this home health. So yeah, that's why I'm doing the concierge business to get my foot in the door to provide in-home services. So if you needed a fetal heart monitor, like an NST, or you needed IV medications, hydration, lab draws, and you're pregnant, or you just came home from the hospital and you don't want to take your beautiful newborn baby to the lab on day three of life, then you can have a nurse come to you, right? I'm just like, why not? My questions are always why and why not? So I will drag you along this journey with me and let you know how it's going. Right now, I have supplies and I'm almost ready to go. I'm licensed, insured. Yeah, I'm just getting my, I think on Monday, I start, well, today, because this is getting released today, I have my first training with my EMR software. So that's the electronic medical record where we will take our intake for patients and it's just a home health agency software. So guys, things are going. Today I have a nurse coming in. Today's Friday. I have a nurse coming in to talk to her about joining the team. This is the first time that I'm specifically looking for labor nurses. I will be bringing on about three nurses to get this running. And yeah, I'm just really excited, you guys. And I hope you're interested. If you have questions about this, if you are a nurse and you are like, what the heck is she talking about? What is she doing? Are in concierge service? You mean I don't have to work at the bedside? Yeah, call me, send me a message, go to myfriendsanurse.com. We're actually completely rebuilding the website. So right now it's an older version, but in about a month, we're going to have a brand new, beautiful website up that will give you all the information on the services we provide. And yeah, you could also say, why not? Why not me? Or if you're pregnant and you're looking for a nurse to come and visit you at home, if you got told by your doctor that you have to go to the hospital to do NSTs twice a week, but you have kids at home, or you're having issues with transportation, or you have work, it's really hard to take that time off. Well, you can have a nurse, me specifically, or one of the nurses that I recruit to be part of my friend's nurse, come to you, whether it's in the office or at home on your schedule, and get those NSTs done with your doctor. So I'm reaching out to doctors, clients, nurses right now. I've been networking for a couple of years on this. Really revved it up in the last 6 months, obviously, since I left the bedside. I was like, oh, shoot, it's now or never. So obviously, I'm sitting in my brand new office with boxes of supplies, and it's go time, guys. So very excited. I was so excited to listen to this episode again, and I'll probably listen to it again on Monday when it's released, because it's just that good with Dawn. We align a lot. If this is one of the only episodes that you listen to of the Birthlink, then, you know, I think you're ahead of the game, because she dives in so deep on the essentials for what to know and how to prep for your birth in a hospital specifically. Let's dive into this episode with Dawn. Again, if you want to find her, she's at pivotalbirth.com, or you can find her on Instagram at pivotalbirth. She has amazing classes, and we'll get into it at the end of the episode. So I hope you hang tight and listen the whole way through. I kind of think you will, because it's that good. But you let me know, okay? You message me. If you hate it, message me. If you love it, leave a review, leave a comment. Please rate, subscribe. I love you guys. And let's get into this episode. Welcome to the Birthlink Podcast, presented by My Friends a Nurse. I'm your host, Colette Wakoliker, a high-risk labor and delivery nurse right here in sunny California. I'm also an OB-certified specialist, birth educator, lactation expert, and mother of two beautiful daughters. I am passionate about guiding you through the miraculous journey of pregnancy and childbirth, using evidence and history and asking the reason why. I have some incredible medical friends and colleagues, and we're all here to help you navigate this often overwhelming birthing hospital system in the United States. My goal is to gain trust in birth, improve this system, and provide some valuable insights. Let's make this journey a little less daunting and a lot more joyful. Let's get into it. Dawn, welcome to the Birthlink Podcast. I have been so excited to have you on. I know we've been chatting for like 15 minutes already just about my own birth stories with starting at a new hospital. And I want to get into it with you now, because coming from Pivotal Birth and your passion for education and yes, empowering parents to learn how to navigate this hospital system and birth in general, is just so inspiring. And I am passionate about this stuff too, so I think this is going to be a great, great conversation. Welcome, Dawn. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here. So my name is Dawn Hancock. I'm the owner and educator at Pivotal Birth. And I became a labor and delivery nurse in 2003. I started labor and delivery straight out of nursing school and have always worked in the maternal newborn field in various capacities, sometimes in civilian hospitals, military hospitals, antepartum. So if you're hospitalized in, you know, during your pregnancy for one reason or another, I've done that, postpartum, newborn nursery, all these types of things. Most of the time I've worked in the low risk settings. I've even done home birth for a while in North Carolina for about a year and a half. I loved home birth so much. But I can't like get away from it. I'm currently not working in the hospital as a labor and delivery nurse because I kept trying so hard to help facilitate changes in the system, right? Why are we trying
it? Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Why are we stimulating these babies so vigorously after delivery?
My biggest pet peeve.
Oh, don't need it. I did a video yesterday, actually, on TikTok about some of the interventions that are unnecessary interventions that are just kind of like blanketly placed out there for all people, you know, like routine cervical exams and prenatal appointments, routine IV fluids during your labor process, restricting food and beverage, clamping and cutting that cord between 30 and 60 seconds for everybody, regardless of what they want, and vigorously stimulating that newborn. All of these are seemingly harmless interventions, right? Like they seem like it's not that big of a deal, right? But they mess with our heads. They mess with our thinking. If we get a cervical exam early on in pregnancy, we're like, or you know, in our 38th week and nothing's happening, we think something's wrong with our body and it's incapable of dilating. You don't need to be dilating at 38 weeks at a prenatal appointment. There's absolutely no reason for it. If you are, fine, but there's no reason for it. And it can mess with your thinking and your confidence, right?
And sometimes in labor too.
Absolutely. Cervical exams in labor, unless an intervention like a cervical exam is going to change what we do. Like if it's going to impact our decision on what we do next, there's no reason for it. That there are some providers who want cervical exams on their patients every 2 hours, regardless. Why? It interferes with the labor process. It's unnecessary. It increases your risk for infection. Like there's a lot of reasons why we shouldn't be doing interventions that are not medically necessary. IV fluids can restrict your movement in labor, right? It makes you feel like you're not capable of hydrating well, right? If you're holding down your fluids, there's no reason for you to have IV fluids going in continuously. You already have to pee a lot in labor because your bladder's being squished. So
exactly. So and then if you're on Pitocin, okay, we want to watch because sometimes Pitocin can be can keep you from peeing too much, or you know, it can be antidiuretic, if I'm getting that right. And then it can cause excessive swelling. It can cause an increase of weight for your baby, which means a drastic decrease in weight as your baby's peeing, which then leads to, oh, well, we need to give your baby formula. We're worried it's losing too much weight. But how much fluid did you get in labor? And they're just not discussing this with you. We're just hanging that LR and attaching it to your IV. And this is routine for everybody. And all of a sudden, you know, we're giving you 500 cc's here and then 500 cc's there and 250 here and two. And all of a sudden you're 4 liters fluid before you deliver. Yes. Like that's and not going to do anything.
That swelling takes so long to go down. It can impact your breastfeeding even. So they seem like they're not a big deal, but they actually are. And it's sad that in our medical system, we have to advocate against things that we don't even need. Like it shouldn't be like that, but unfortunately it is. And being a nurse in the hospital, I kept trying to help advocate for change in the hospital system. And y'all, I was getting nowhere fast. You know, it was challenging. I did work up in a hospital up in the Washington State area that was the most like leading edge. And we had a lot of great evidence-based practices there. And there was great communication between the nurses, providers, and whatnot. But it still took forever to change things that were out of practice, right?
So it's a huge ship to change.
Yeah, it's huge. And so I had to pivot myself right straight out of the hospital system as an RN into my own business where I can actually help patients and their families learn how to pivot themselves while they're going through this journey. Because ultimately, all great changes that happen in childbirth happen because the families are advocating for it and they're insisting on better care, right? Like twilight sleep, that was a big thing. The medical community, that was like everybody thought they just wanted to be knocked out. And then they saw all these harms that were happening, and the families are the ones that had to fight to get rid of the twilight sleep because it was harming so many people, deaths, so many issues, right? So I love empowering families to be able to pivot themselves. And so I teach what's called a pivot plan workshop where I teach them to pee. Like the first one is, what kind of permissions do you want your care team to get from you? Some people come into the hospital to have a baby, and there is nothing wrong with this. They come into the hospital to have a baby and they're like, you're the nurse, you're the doctor, do what you need to do. I don't even care. Just do it. I'm here. I trust you. Let's go. And that's perfectly fine. Do that thing if that's what works for you. There are some people that just want permission for certain things, you know? Like, I want you to ask permission before you do a procedure on me, or, you know? And then there's other people who are like, no, I want you to get permission for everything. And you let them know. You communicate. What level of permissions are you wanting? And understand that that can change throughout your labor process. You may come in saying, I want you to get permission for every little thing. And then at some point you're like, you know what? I trust you. We've established a good relationship here. Just do what you need to do. If you need to come check me, go ahead and come check me. It's a, you know, now as nurses, we really should be checking with patients anytime we touch them, in my opinion.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I had to explain that to some of the nurses this week.
Yeah, that should be a no-brainer.
It should be, but
but some patients, you know, they're like, no, if you're coming in the room to clean or restock or whatever, just do your thing, act like, you know, I'm gonna just kind of like ignore you. You know, the patient's like, I don't need you to know what you're doing. My space is your space. Let's do this, you know. And others are like, why are you in my room? What's going on? What are you doing now? What's, you know, and so we ultimately, as care providers, we want to help you feel as comfortable as possible in your birthing space, right? So how do we do that? One of the best ways we could do that is to know what's important to you. So the P stands for permissions. The I stands for inclusiveness, or what, first of all, what do you want me to call you? Do you want me to call you Colette? Do you want me to call you Mama? Do you want me to call you Sweetie, you know, like we have these endearing terms that can be very offensive to some people. Even calling somebody mama can be offensive or heartbreaking, you know, especially if they've had a loss or other situations. Calling whoever else is in the room, are they daddy? Are they Fred? Are they George or Frank? You know, like is the female in the room who's supporting you? Is that your doula? Is that your mom? Who is going to be included in this, and how can we include them in a way that they feel is helpful? You know, whether we're talking about names, endearing terms, pronouns, whatever, it doesn't matter. What's important to you, who's important to you, and how can we include them in the decision-making process here? And then the V stands for values. What are the things that you value that are really important to you while you're here giving birth? Is privacy something you value? Let's get you some mesh panties. Your water broke. We want you to be comfortable underneath whatever clothing you're wearing, whether it's your own gown or the hospital gown. There's some hospitals that are like, no, you can't wear underwear. I'm going to have to check you in 2 hours. But then the patient's not feeling comfortable. The patient feels exposed. They don't feel safe. When they don't feel safe, the stress hormones are increased. And guess what that does? It makes all the, even the natural oxytocin decrease its effectiveness, because those stress hormones are occupying those receptor sites.
It's funny. We had, since you mentioned that, like we had someone this week, she came in and she was going to start her induction. As mm-hmm. we both know, inductions can be quite a long process, especially yes. if you're not contracting already. So she came in and we had the gown ready for her. We had everything all set. I needed a urine sample. I said, okay, you can change into your gown. And she held it. And I immediately was like, is that okay? Would you be comfortable changing into the gown, or would you prefer yes. staying in your own clothes? And she looks at me, she's like, can I stay in my own clothes? I'm like, of course, if you're comfortable. I was like, that's not a problem with me. And she was like, I would love to stay in my own clothes. Like, I'm just feeling absolutely. Cozy and comfortable. And the other nurse came in because I was training. And she's like, looked at me like, why is she not in a gown? I was like, she prefers not to be in a gown right now. And I think that's totally fine. And she was so happy. And it was so easy, so simple for us to ask.
Right.
I think as nurses, we're just not even acknowledging just the simplest things to us. Like, it's just yes. so routine for us to be like, change into your gown now and give us mm-hmm. a urine sample and get into bed so we can put the monitors on and start the process. Leave your underwear off. Yeah. Take everything off. It's like, it's a surgery, right? It's like, it's a procedure. You're coming and doing it, but it's not, it's just so different.
Well, it changes and shifts the power dynamics.
Yes.
When somebody comes into the room and we as providers are fully clothed in our professional attire and have shoes on our feet and all the things that we need to feel comfortable, you know, a bra on, underwear on, you know, And then we tell them to strip everything off. But here, let me give you this uncomfortable, scratchy gown. And even if it's a comfortable gown, still no underwear, no bra, no soft,
no permission,
warm, fuzzy socks, no permission. Right. So as providers, as nurses and healthcare providers, we have an opportunity, many opportunities to establish trust and kindness and consideration. And just, we have to build that foundation of trust, right? And so asking them to, if they feel comfortable changing into a gown, asking them for a urine sample. Like, we were taught, here, go pee in this cup. I need you to give me a urine sample. Yep. But it takes just as much time, like you said, to grab a cup and say, so the doctor's ordered a urine sample so we could just check for protein. Is that okay with you?
Yep.
That exactly. builds trust so easy. Right there.
Exactly. So immediately.
Immediately, right?
And most of the time, they're going to, you guys are going to be perfectly fine saying, yes, sure. But now your shoulders are more relaxed. You're feeling like, oh, I belong here. Oh, I'm not a sick patient that needs to get into a hospital gown in the bed because that isn't empowering to me. You know, I understand if you come in with a stroke or a heart attack or something. Yes, right. We're going to need to require you certain things because this is life-saving procedures, but this is just different. Birth is a little different. We need you to be empowered and relaxed and trusting, and it's just a different dynamic. And
right.
They haven't really got at the hospital yet. It's still very procedural and medical.
Right.
But you're right. It just is. It's the same amount of time. And
Even the placement of the IVs.
Yeah.
Like if a patient says, I really don't want a wrist IV, they hurt me every time. And the nurse is like, that's where we're putting it. Gee.
Yeah.
Trust.
Yeah. Yeah.
Shattered. Right.
Done. You no longer have any control over your birth. We are going to take charge now.
And we'll let you know what we're
going to do. Hopefully we let you know what we're going to do and when we're going to do it. But we're not going to ask your permission. And if we are, it's going to be kind of like a backhand, like, hey, we're just asking because, but we're really going to have to do this. Because if you say no, we're really not going to support that. We're going to keep pressuring you until you say yes. And
right.
Just,
And I've worked in like 5 hospitals in 4 different states. And only one of those hospitals was it like we're talking about right now. And that was up in the Washington state area where there was just this kindness, this consideration, this actual mutual respect and shared decision making. Like, people weren't getting strong armed into everything the providers wanted.
I would love to see the stats on that too, like the data on that, like beautiful. The C-section rates and the patient satisfaction rates. I bet they're great.
Mm-hmm. We did have it then. I know the management and stuff has changed, so I don't know exactly what it's like there currently. I know things had been going downhill after I left and moved away because of all the shifts with management. But we had originally an incredible manager that was just so amazing at establishing this kind of environment. I mean, imagine walking into a hospital, Colette, where you and everybody else on the floor go by the first name, regardless of your position. It doesn't matter if you're scrubbing the floors or performing the surgery. Everybody goes by the first name. Period. Because everybody is an equally important part of the team. You know, so it was beautiful. It was so fabulous. And again, I can't speak for its current status, but it was wonderful. And it gave me an understanding that things can actually be different, you know? And so when we go back to the pivot plan and we talk about the values, the thing that the patient values, sometimes the patient, like I said, values, I just want you to do everything you got to do. I trust you. Just do it. And they feel safe there. Like the responsibility of the decision making and all that is off their shoulders and it's placed on the providers and the nurses. And that's where they feel the safest and the most comfortable. And that's perfectly fine. It should be based on what it is that you value. If you value more alone time with your partner and being in the room alone, you don't want a bedside nurse that's actually at the bedside a lot. Let them know, you know, we'd like a little extra time by ourselves, or we'll call you if we need anything. We'd just let them know, you know.
That's some work. It is some work to discover what your values are. You kind of, at the start of it, you don't even really know. You're like, well, what is it? And that's where a coach like you or me, we can actually start asking those questions to start making you realize like, well, yeah, privacy is really important to me. Like, you know, I'm kind of more of an introvert. I need time to get to trust people. Okay. Yeah. I see. So sometimes just the work, maybe some journaling. Maybe we can get into it in a little bit in each point, like how we can practice these things. And
absolutely.
Yeah. Values.
And practice is important.
Very important. Yeah. Yeah.
And then the O.
I was spelling it out too. I'm like, I need to go back to school.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. No. The O. It's like the PIVIT. No. I'm having a brain freeze right now. I hope you edit this.
Of course. I'm going to edit all that. Like, I go for it. Oh. I don't know.
Let me grab my phone. I've got my notes here. Oh, you know what? I did. So I is supposed to be interventions, not inclusion. Let me just pull this up. I don't know why I didn't pull it up beforehand.
Well, I love inclusion too.
Yeah.
It could be inclusion, interventions, intuition. I mean, we got some I's.
There's so many I's. Okay, here we go. Permission, involvement, inclusion is what I had. So
perfect.
Okay. O is options. So I had.
Okay. So let's start right there. Starting with the I's. We don't have to go through the I's and the B's again. Just make a little snippet of what all the I's are, and we can just include it, and I'll make sure it sounds all pretty.
Okay. I'll start with the P, kind of like a recap.
Okay.
Just not going into detail, but
okay.
So just to recap, the P stands for permissions. Like, what kind of permissions are you wanting in what way? And understanding that that can change. The I is for inclusion or involvement. How do you want the people to be included or involved in the care that you're receiving? The V stands for values. What are the things that you value that you'd like to protect while you're there? The O stands for options. Now, this can be an interesting one, right? There are some people, again, who don't want to know all the options. They just want to know what you want me to do. That's totally fine. There is nothing wrong if that's what your choice is. There are some people who want to know, you know, like the first three options or whatever. And then there's others that want to know all their options, the risks, the benefits, and the different types of alternatives that are available to them. You know what I mean? So getting comfortable asking your provider, okay, you want to break my water. What are our other options here right now? What are the risks involved if you break my water? Like, what's the chances of me having a prolapsed cord? If baby's up high and you got a lot of water, there's a higher risk of your cord being prolapsed, and that's an automatic cesarean. So you want to know what the risks are. What are the benefits? Like, are we wanting to break your water so we could put a scalp electrode on the baby because things are not looking good and we need to get a better picture? That's a medical necessity, right? But if we just want to do it because we want to put internals in because they're just easier to keep track of, that's not a medical reason. That's convenience. And your birth should not consist of a bunch of medical interventions that make it more convenient for your doctors and nurses to provide care for you. That's not your job to make their job convenient or easy.
I had a doctor at another hospital I worked at, and this is how he suggested breaking the water. He comes in while she's already in a lot of pain and requested an epidural. And I told him that, but he walks in anyways. I said, yeah, go say hi to her. This is the first time he's ever met her. He walks in. He's like, oh, I can see you're moving along. Okay. We'll get the epidural for you, but why don't we break your bag and we could just have this baby. And that was it. That was his spiel.
That was the consent.
That was his informed, you know, suggestion. I'm like, is that it? First of all, she's not listening to you. She's in so much pain. I was like, is there, look at me first, because I'm the one that's going to have to clean this up and handle this. Also, the baby's heart rate can do some funky stuff after you rupture it because things start moving.
Right.
So if we do it right before an epidural, I don't know if the baby is challenged from the water breaking or from the epidural. Plus, it's going to be a big mess she's going to have to sit in. It's going to significantly increase possibly her pain. So mm-hmm. now she has to sit through an epidural in pain. Like, they're not thinking sometimes yeah. of the repercussions of one intervention, as right. big or small as they think it is. And he's, oh, yeah, we can. So I said, I'm like, any chance we could have this discussion once she's more comfortable and at, with beautiful. The epidural? Oh, yeah, we can do that. I'll come back. So we had the epidural.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, and he came back and broke her water. And then immediately after that, he's like, okay, so the next step, we'll get you on Pitocin. I'm like, can you get out of here?
Yeah, let's
give her Pitocin. Get out. She's contracting every 2 to 3 minutes. He just ruptured her, and she just got an epidural about 15 minutes ago. Like, slow your roll. But this is kind of what you're going to be going through.
Right.
So you need to know your options,
yes.
but also know how to be like, thank you. And what happens if I just don't do anything right now?
Exactly. The whole use your brain acronym. What are the benefits, the risks, the alternatives? What does my right. intuition say? And N stands for no, or I need time, or not now. Right?
Right. Nothing. Like, nothing. What if I just don't do anything right now? What yeah. is going to happen? Right?
Exactly.
I love that acronym. Just and, as a reminder.
You know, Colette, I think what you just said is a really good key point that parents can take away. You said when your patient, you know, the doctor wanted to give the, you know, break the bag of waters right before the epidural. Is there any way that we can wait until she's more comfortable to have this conversation? That is going to be one of those key phrases that you can put in your toolbox to use, because it doesn't matter if a nurse is coming in trying to do an admissions assessment during a contraction, or if somebody's trying to start an IV in the middle of a contraction or whatever. Like, is there any way we could stop this just for a minute until this contraction's gone and she's more comfortable? Or again, waiting to break the waters after an epidural's been placed or something like that. There are right. some conversations that are not urgent enough that a woman in pain has to make a decision right then and there. Do you know
and
what I mean?
It's unfortunate because many times the nurses and doctors, we're going through our own checklist and what yes. we need to get done to get you admitted, to get, you know, you to the next stage, to follow this Friedman's curve, to just manage your labor, make sure we're preventing infections and all of this stuff. And it's pretty much an algorithm we use on every patient. So we just want to keep it moving. And we're on our own heads thinking about our own stuff that we need to do for you. And we don't take a second to look at you and see where you're at, right? And what you actually need. So right. that's where having a plan pivot, like you have a pivot plan, you have the values in order, and you know
yes.
how to speak up, and you have
yes.
an advocate with you to be like, yes. hey, could you, you have to bring your own, like what you're going through sometime to the forefront and remind your nurse or your doctor, hey, I'm in a lot of pain right now.
Right.
Maybe you can't say it, but your partner, hey, she's in a lot of pain right now, because you're not always going to have a nurse like me, but
right.
she's in a lot of pain right now. Can we hold off on what anything you want to say or do?
Right. And
is that okay?
Speak,
is this an emergency?
Right.
No?
And if you
okay,
can't
great.
Speak,
we're going to take some more time.
Right. I'm so sorry about that. Right. Take some more time, just like you said. Yeah. And if you can't speak because you're in so much pain, Colette, they can just simply put their hand up.
Yep.
Like,
yep, not, nope, not
don't
right
talk
now.
To me.
Yep.
Some people can't handle being talked to or touched during the labor process. I was one
mm-hmm.
of them. And it's
mm-hmm.
like, and then finish your contraction and then get back to them. Because
if you can't see her, she's just holding her hand up above her head. Like you would say, if you're praying or say, hey, nope, wait, put your head down. That's a universal sign for not right now.
Yep.
not right now.
I love it.
Talk to the hand, because I ain't listening.
Exactly. But I think, too, you bringing this up was very timely, because we're talking about how do we want to know about our options, right? And not only knowing about them, but how to advocate for them and when they're talked about, how they're discussed. Like, all of those things are variables, right, that are going to happen throughout the process. And one of the reasons we need a pivot plan is because there are variables you have no control over. None. Mm-hmm. So let's get a plan to pivot when they happen so we'll feel comfortable at it. And practicing them with your partner or your doula or your family members and friends, you know, it's totally worth it.
Everyone needs to be on board with what the expectations are once you go into labor, right? And understand that things are going to change. You have no idea how you're going to respond to labor or the hospital. It could very well, like we always say, watch, because when you go to the hospital, you can get into fight or flight, so your labor can stall, blah, blah, blah. But it very well, I've seen many times women come to the hospital and they almost feel like, I feel safe now. I'm in the hospital.
Yes.
And they just dilate and deliver like
and
ASAP.
Yes.
Yeah. You have no idea how you're going to be, but plan for it either way, right? Maybe you want a natural birth. Okay. Well, how would you pivot if you just can't handle the contractions or something's happening that you need to get an epidural? Do you understand an epidural? Do you understand what the procedure is, the side effects? And if you do, it's going to reduce your anxiety. It's going to improve the outcomes and your overall experience, right? So you got to understand like, oh no, I want a natural birth. Well, still understand what options are available so you have them in your back pocket. But yes, move forward with that natural birth. Positive affirmation. You're going to do it. You're going to be amazing. Oh, it's okay. You're not feeling it. You don't want to. Has this been a 40-hour labor with no sleep and you just need sleep? Girl, we got you.
Right.
You want to know, you want to hear about your options? Okay.
Right.
You know?
And this is a great thing too. I definitely recommend everybody understand all their comfort measures options in pregnancy before they go into labor. But there are some who will not do that. And that's your choice. Absolutely. And so if that's you and say you do have to pivot and you end up needing one, ask your nurse to help you understand the epidural before the anesthesiologist gets in there, because they can kind of give you that education and help you feel more at peace and more comfortable with that.
Yeah.
So if there's something you didn't prepare for that you have to face during your pivoting and birth, talk to your nurse, talk to your doctor. You could even say, can you explain it to me like I'm in kindergarten? Because I want to understand this, but my brain's not grasping what you just said. So I need you to explain it in terms I can understand.
Right. I even suggest if I have clients, they want a home birth. Mm-hmm. So go take the hospital tour.
Yes.
Like be familiar with how your plan may pivot, how it may go down. Is like a 5% chance you're gonna probably go to the hospital. So understand what that would look like. So it's not so scary if it does happen, right? It's not so out of the realm of possibility. And then get onto your merry way with your original, like stick to your plan, right?
Exactly. So the T in pivot actually stands for time for debrief. So one of the most common things I see with people I work with, and I'm sure you see this yourself, is there's a lot of misunderstanding about what happened in their birth. Like there's things that happened that they don't know why it happened, or the timeline gets all wonky and stuff. And so my recommendation is after you've had your delivery, before you leave labor and delivery, your doctor and stuff, have time to debrief for anything that you didn't understand that happened. Ask your doctor, why did this happen or why did we have to do that? I'm just not grasping why we had to do that. So get that understanding. And then before you get discharged from the hospital, talk to your care team, your doctors, nurses, the people who are part of your care team, and clear up anything that's confusing to you. Oh my gosh, well, when my water broke, why was it yellow? You know, like if you didn't know that the baby passed meconium, or if anything that you have questions about, you write them down at 2 o'clock in the morning when you're breastfeeding and you're like, what was that all about? I don't even know. Let me write it down and I'll ask the nurse when she comes in. Ask the questions then so that you can get an idea, a better understanding, and you're not walking away with a bunch of misunderstandings about your birth. This is going to help you have a less stressful recovery and a less stressful processing of your birth, okay? There can be births that end up in an emergency C-section with baby in the NICU, and it's not considered traumatic to people because of the way they've been able to process throughout the way and their understanding of things, the way they felt supported, the way they felt heard, and the way that they got to, you know, like share in the decision-making through the process. Even though those things happened, they didn't feel traumatized. And then there can be somebody who comes in, delivers quite quickly or within a few hours, and their birth was traumatic, even though both mom and baby are doing fine medically. But it was a traumatic birth because maybe the nurses were rude or the doctor was dismissive or they got forced onto their back to give birth when they intended to give birth on their hands and knees. And that is a traumatic experience. When your power and your choices are stripped away from you is traumatic. And so learning how do we advocate for this. Now, that timeout situation, if you're that birth that you were forced onto your back, that needs to be addressed with the doctor too. And that if you're forced into a position that you don't want to be, that needs to be reported to the hospital. Talk to a patient advocate there, or you could even ask to speak to the house supervisor. Like, let's not put up with this anymore, you guys. If you have something negative happen to you during your birth experience and it doesn't get reported, it's more likely to happen to the next person and the next person. You know what I mean? Now, there are going to be sometimes you don't have it in you. You don't have the capacity to report it. That's okay. You might get the capacity to report it 2 years down the road. Do it. Still report it. That's okay. Like, these things need to be discussed. They need to be brought to light so that they can be shifted and changed. And that's one of the reasons both Colette and I are here. We are trying to empower families to speak up for what it is they want in the moment, help them to understand the things that they went through afterwards, you know, and also speak up for themselves and their, you know, other families that are coming through, you know, through the
pipeline. I love the debriefing idea. Yes. I love to debrief, especially with the family, because they're sitting there watching everything and ones with the most questions because it wasn't their body. They didn't do the planning you did. And they're just like, what just happened? What did I just see? And I always sit down with them and talk to them. My heart is with them. And of course, with the mom. Now, as a nurse, maybe you find this too, but I feel I do come with some of my own biases, obviously.
Absolutely. We all do.
With the hospital and the doctors, like, pushing on her back with the bright light. And I just told you the story before we started recording. So it's like, I won't necessarily tell the mom all those things that I saw. One, I work there. These are my coworkers. I may go to my manager and discuss like, hey, this is what I saw. I don't want to throw anyone under the bus. I think we're all learning and trying to do our best. Even the doctors, like they don't want to do something wrong. They don't want to do something to hurt you. So I never go with like anyone's the villain, but it's like, hey, how can we change these? How can we improve things? But for the parents, because I'm not absolutely 100% sure sometimes of some things, you know, oh yeah, you tore because you went on your back and da-da-da. I don't know if that's necessarily true, right? So you may not get the full picture from the doctors. You may not get the full picture or the right answers from the nurse, unfortunately, but they can definitely highlight some things for you that you may have missed and answer those questions that may help. But that's why I kind of love what I do on the outside of the hospital and a youth coach. So all my clients, I always debrief with them. Yeah. Again, I will listen to them and I can answer things in more of a honest way, even though I wasn't there. I was like, no, you got Pitocin. This is the side effects per se, da, 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 da. Right? So I try not to ever say like, oh, you shouldn't have done that. Oh, that's why you did this. We're only there debriefing, discussing what has happened. We're not putting anyone at fault. We're not saying, oh, you should have or shouldn't have. It's more of like, let's talk. First of all, most of the time when I debrief, I don't say too much. I just let them talk. Yes. And that alone, telling your birth story to someone that can understand and listens and ask questions without judging is so amazing, so crucial. I haven't had one yet. Even the births that seem like, oh, they were so great. They cry. Like the moms cry. It's like getting it out. It's such a huge moment in your life. Mm-hmm. It's transformational. And to be able to just give your true honest story of what in your point of view, it's just like, first, I feel so privileged to be able to listen to it. And I never come with any like judging. And you know, I can give them the right questions to ask themselves. Well, mm-hmm. well, how do you feel about that? Well, what do you think had happened? Yes. What would you do? What are you so glad that you did? What would you do different next time?
Right.
Right. And I kind of leave it at that since I wasn't there. And then sometimes they really want to know things. And I'm like, well, generally, this is what we do. And they're like, oh, and then it just makes
much sense.
That makes so much sense now. Yes. Oh, I get it. And then they can, and then they're laughing and happy at the end of the call. And I think it's, I wish OBs did that. I wish you had like, because a day or two after your birth, you're probably still in La La Land. You haven't really processed what's happening. I wish we could see our doctor a week after, simply, even a video call, simply to talk about your birth. What happened?
Oh, yeah. Girl, when I worked for the home birth midwife, we would do the deliveries at home and then we would be there like within 24 to 48 hours yes. to check on everybody, right? And that was one of the most amazing visits to me because not only were we doing the newborn screening and the hearing screens and the cardiac defect screens and all that and the weight gain and checking on all these things, we were hearing their story and their experience of it. And it's really important when we're doing that to hear what they experience, not what we experienced. So that's why the right. listening is so powerful, is because we're keeping quiet. But hearing what they've experienced helps them process it. Right.
Because right. then it's, if you're in the hospital, the doctors come and they want to debrief, they're just going to tell you, oh, yeah, it went great. And you pushed it. Like they're coming from their point of view. And mm-hmm. and I hope we start really listening to right. to the moms and the families and the partners and where are we? Where are the holes? I know there's so many gaps in our system. So where are they? I think listening right. to our families, we're going to get those answers. Right?
And that question right there, where are they, is as labor and delivery nurses, that's one of the most important questions we can ask when they walk into the hospital or get pulled in a stretcher or a wheelchair. They can't even sit down because baby's about to come out. Like, where are they? What do I need to do for them where they're at right now? Not what do I need to put in Epic, you know, the
right,
computer
right.
system, you know, right. Do they change into a gown and give me a urine cup? How do I speak in a way that I can establish trust, right? Because where are they? Oh, they're a new person. They don't trust me yet. How do I help mm-hmm. them trust me? Oh, let's see how we're asking about the gown and the urine. Yeah. Let's not share. Like you said, we all come in with biases. Us, you and I tend to lean more toward the natural, right? The low intervention side of things. But if we have a patient who is coming to the hospital to have a baby because they want a lot of interventions, we can actually cause trauma by recommending or pushing our low intervention yes. methods yeah. on them. We yeah. can't do that because it's not about us. Yeah. So we have to constantly ask, where are right. they?
You know, for them, maybe a repeat C-section. I had a mom yeah. who was contracting. She really wanted to try a VBAC, right? She's like, yeah, I just want to be back. And then the doctor came in and, you know, I saw her contracting. She was in pain. She's like, well, I think you should still have the C-section. And it says, I mean, but if you want to try, I'm like, I could check your cervix. And she checks it. Like, oh, it's you're still closed and it's really high and this isn't going to work. So I think you should go for, I think you should still have the C-section.
Yeah.
And of course, I'm standing right there. I'm keeping my mouth shut because honestly, this isn't my conversation. And, you know, I'll interject with questions when I have them. But I'm going to have to let, all I say was like, well, she's contracting every 2-3 minutes. She's really feeling them. We can give her some time if that's what she wants. But she's like, well, I think we should just have this baby because it's going to be a really big baby and a really hard labor. I'm like, oh, here we go. Then the mom was like, okay, that's what I want. I don't like, I'll go, let's do this repeat C-section. I feel I already prepared for it. I'm comfortable. I'm not here to then convince her to have a VBAC because how do right. I know it's not going to just end up in emergency C-section and then I'm right. the villain, right? So right. I can't interject, even though I'm like, you could do it. I don't know this. And if she's more comfortable at that moment to, and she understands the risks of a C-section, which by the way, are never mentioned, then you know, and she understands that, and that's what she chose. I'm going to support that. I'm going to make sure
absolutely
it's the most comfortable C-section, the bed. Let's put some music. What can I do to make sure that she's, you know, going to have the best experience possible? And guess right. what? That baby was 6 pounds, 4 ounces.
Well, and like, you bring classic. Up another important point, because like, you don't know what kind of trust is already between the doctor and the patient, because they've likely already established that right outside the hospital during the prenatal care. So, and you have to be careful as a nurse, because you don't want to sever any trust that is there. Right.
They'll because, sever it with me all day long. I hate that. But
yeah, but
that's a different topic. But you're absolutely right. The nurse and the doctor are still work together. When the doctor diagnoses and places the orders, it's my job to assess and, you know, give the medication or do the intervention, as long as I also feel it is safe and appropriate. Right.
Right.
Otherwise, it's going to be a conversation between
absolutely.
The doctor and I. And
absolutely.
But it is my job to then follow through with those orders, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're not going to have nurses and doctors arguing over things in front of you, especially. So
right.
it's going to be a conversation between you and your doctor, right? And
right.
And
yeah.
And the nurse will be like, okay.
Right. Right. And it's hard, like, as a nurse, like, some of the things I do in similar situations like that, like, if you just had a patient that said, I'm so excited for trying this feedback and stuff like that, and the doctor was coming in and saying that, and being like, well, how do you feel about that, Susie? I know you were just telling me how excited you were about doing a VBAC and having a trial of labor. Where do you feel like you feel the most comfortable right now? Kind of laying a little bit more information in a way that won't sever that trust. But you did what was right, right? You supported your patient in the decision she made with the information she was given. And it is a fine line. I don't think people often understand how stressful the role of a labor and delivery nurse can be when you are like that in between the patient and the doctor. And
I think we lose a lot of nurses that way.
We do.
Right. Like, you had to leave. I left for a year and now I'm back, but it's on day three. I'm like, I don't know. I can do this. It's very hard. It's, you know, it's a struggle is there when you're seeing just, you know, consent being thrown out the window and, you know, things. I had every single patient I had, there's like, they called me an angel and like, we've had such a rough time. I'm so glad you're here. Like, because immediately that's how I developed trust very quickly by
absolutely.
Just asking for their preferences.
Yes.
It's so simple.
So
and then supporting
simple.
Them wherever they're at.
Yes. Supporting families according to their values, not my own, is a huge part of why I do what I do. And I didn't have to leave the bedside, but I just was like, too much of my energy is going toward doing this thing that isn't moving the needle.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, I need to put my energy in a place where it actually can make a difference to families. And I can't even tell you how many messages I get all the time about how the videos that I put out on TikTok and Instagram have actually helped people, you know, make decisions, have conversations, dig deeper. You know, I do a lot of breastfeeding education, a lot of things about advocating. And although I did step away as a nurse, I have started school to become a nurse midwife. So I'm in my second term of midwifery school now. I love every minute of it. And I'm just so excited.
You're going to have those visits.
Yes. I'm so excited because if I'm working in a hospital, I'll support your birth in the hospital, but I really want to help increase the opportunities for people to have out-of-hospital births here in California, where I live. And I'm excited about that. Ultimately, that my goal would to be able to do that here in the area that I live. But I am a wanderlust. One of the things people say, what's the most interesting thing about you, Dawn? And it's like, I have lived in 42 different places. Like, I have moved 42 different times. And I get restless. And so I would love to be a travel nurse midwife to help home birth midwives and birth center midwives actually be able to take time off.
We need that. And there's so many like provider deserts out there.
Yes.
I think like 50% in Texas. It's crazy. I've just heard this morning. So it's like we need you.
And these midwives are like, they are working years, decades without a vacation, without time to have their own babies, you know? And so if I could go live in a place for 3, 6 months, a year even, while people get time to do what they need to do, and then I can move on to the next place. Because I'm such a wanderlust, I don't have like a hometown. My home is in the people that I love, that I've done life with, that I've helped deliver babies, you know? I mean, seeing babies that I was a part of their care in college now is just like
crazy.
It's so insane, you know?
And you can continue pivotal birth just the same. Yes. Now you just be the pivotal birth with a midwife instead of a nurse. That's
exactly
amazing. And you can move because all your work is virtual. So let's talk about that just a little bit before we end. I know pivotalbirth.com. You can find out more information about your classes, about working with you privately as a coach, your breastfeeding courses.
Yes.
And then maybe explain a little bit what that would look like if someone's like, oh, well, Dawn is amazing. I love her Instagram. Like, how can she be a part of my birth? Like, what would you give your pitch?
My pitch. So I have a free pivot plan workshop that's available on my website to anybody. You can just get in there and you can have access to it right away. It gives you, you know, a more in-depth discussion of what we talked about today. I do have two classes available that are like on demand. One is my breastfeeding starting strong. I'm also a certified lactation counselor, and breastfeeding is, I'm very passionate about helping families because I didn't get the help I needed and I didn't have great experiences with my kids. So that's on demand. You can watch the videos anytime, as many times as you want. You have lifetime access to that. And you can watch those videos about latches and breaking a bad latch and is this a good latch and stuff while you're in the hospital with the baby. And you're like, okay, you know, at night when there's no lactation help available, you know, so you can have access to those. And those are a great tool to have on hand. Watch before delivery, watch afterwards, watch when you're home. It's just a great course. And it's only $50 because I just wish I could give everything away for free. But I got to pay my business bills. And then I do also am a certified Lamaze childbirth educator. So I do have a whole childbirth course that's available on demand also that you can have access to. As far as individual families, I will work with some, but because of midwifery school, I'm limiting the amount of people that I work with on an in-depth basis. But I do 30, 45-minute consultations. Most of those are breastfeeding. I'm not going to lie. Almost all of my clientele are breastfeeding. And I do a lot of that virtually or in person in the Central Valley of California. I love helping with that. Or if I'm traveling, I might be in an area near you because my husband and I do travel a lot.
We're going to have you on a map. Like, where is she now?
Right.
Where in the world is Dawn Hancock?
Right. And I'm in the process of becoming certified with Medi-Cal for doula services for families, because I would love to be able to serve that population here in California while I'm going through midwifery school. There's a lot of red tape there. So I'm still waiting for a few pieces of paper to get squared away.
You can give a super bell. You guys, if you want a doula and you're not sure about insurance or your favorite doula is not accepting insurance, like get a super bell and you should be able to get a refund for that. Most insurances and Medi-Cal will help you out with that. So
yeah, definitely. And I do virtual doula services for the most part. So, but again, I limit that because school, you know.
Yeah, it's time consuming. So we have some stuff you can get right away on your website. You follow her at Pivotal Birth on Instagram. And is there anything else you can want to leave us with?
My recommendation would be, I think, like, I just wish I could hug all these families, right? Like, let me just protect you, right? But I don't need to, because you're perfectly capable of protecting yourself. You are, given the right tools. And I think doing, like, my childbirth education and breastfeeding classes, they're not as expensive as some of the others, because, again, I just want to give it all away for free. Most of these videos are on YouTube or TikTok or whatever. But if you need a convenient, organized fashion, just hop on those classes. And if you decide that you like the way that I teach, that it all comes across well and you just want to work with me, those are the people that do the best, because they're like, oh yeah, I consumed your content. And let me tell you, we connected. You might not know me, Dawn, but I know you because I just watched all of your classes. So the classes, you don't have to remember everything about Pitocin or a cesarean or how they do an epidural. You don't have to memorize all that. The goal is to expose you to the different things that could potentially happen and then to empower you to pivot when the time comes. Because the variables you have no control over, right? The only control you have over is how are you going to handle them when they come, and making sure your partner and whoever else is there supporting you in the room is prepared to pivot with you.
Amazing. I love it. Your work, Dawn, is so important. I think you're helping families so much. You made the right choice, and I'm right there with you. Okay. I'm part of your army. We're doing the good work and supporting our families. And it's a huge picture. There's families and babies and new people, and empowering each other as supporting each other just as women and people in the community. And I hope everyone gets on board, and we can change the system just a little bit, but your births are going to be amazing. I'm very excited.
It is so exciting. And, you know, I think with today, the thing that, you know, everybody here has to deal with is there's such an overload of information, right? It's coming at you from everywhere, no matter where you look. And so if you find somebody, me, somebody else even, that teaches well, that you feel like you connect with, that you can tolerate the sound of their voice, tolerate their expressions, whatever, you know, like, I know I'm not everybody's cup of tea, but find whoever you click with and then dig deep there instead of gathering information from a bazillion different sources.
It'll be real confusing real fast.
Yes, because then you're going to find contradictory information from people. And that leads to confusion, which increases your stress, which increases your chances of, you know, going overdue because you got all this cortisol going on, right? So let's do the things that we need to do to bring down your stress level and help you do what you need to do. So you open up that toolbox, decide what kind of tools you want to put in there, and be ready to pivot because it's going to happen.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much, Dawn. This was such a great conversation. I love talking to other labor nurses. I won't lie. We connect. You get me. It's fun. And I think the moms and families listening, doulas, other nurses are going to get a lot out of it.
So, thank you so much, Colette. I appreciate the invitation.
Anytime. Come back anytime. Bye.
Bye. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to My Friend's a Nurse Presents the Birthing Podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's episode and found it valuable. Before we go, a quick reminder. The information shared on this podcast is for educational purposes only and should not be considered medical advice. Always consult with your healthcare provider for any medical concerns or questions. If you enjoyed the episode, please subscribe, leave a review, and share it with your friends. Your support helps us reach more people and continue to bring you great content. Until next time, stay healthy and stay informed.